going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome on into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. Happy second day of the NBA regular season. This now commences the time of year where we stay up for almost no reason whatsoever until 12 o'clock on the East Coast, watching regular season games being played in November and December, only so that we can see how many threes Nick Young can make. I mean, between that and baseball playoffs, it's like I sit at the end of the couch, I pretend to work, and I just watch TV until way too late that night. You guys know what I'm talking about. But man, that was really fun stuff last night. Celtics look good. And you know what? This team is way more likable, with the exception of Al Horford, who's just grumpy. That Celtics team, even though, rest in peace, Gordon Hayward, rest in peace. I think he's gonna be okay, by the way. It's better than a tear. If you've ever torn stuff, you tear stuff in the ankle, that's brutal. You break things, doctors know how to fix bones, so long as it's not anything really little. I don't know, we'll know more later. Anyway, Celtics team, Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart and Kyrie, like, that's fun. They're fun to watch. Aaron Baines, it's like an upgraded version, a just slightly different version of Olynyk, but way more likable than Olynyk. They're a little bit easier to root for than they were last year. Cavs, I mean, the Cavs are now the official team of men who are 30 and older. The extra pass, the salt and pepper K-Love hair, the LeBron to Jameson Crowder bounce pass express. We're going to see so much of that. And just kind of everybody looks like they're ready to just kind of rest their knees, you know, like exercising, but ready for a little bit of rest. How about them Rockets, boy? Ooh, that's going to be fun. I love it. So NBA is here, but we still got NFL player breakdown. I'm sure if you just heard those 2 minutes, you're like, wait a second, Sean, this is the NFL show, right? Yes. Player breakdown for week 7 of the NFL. It's an interesting one. It definitely is. There are some great spots, some bad spots, but we're going to talk all about it. We'll give you at least 6 quarterbacks that you can play. I'll go through about 6 to 8 different running back options that you can look at, and then upwards of 10 wide receivers, 3 tight ends, 2 defenses, and a kicker. You know, I mean, you do whatever you want, a kicker and defense. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. Come on. Let's jump straight into the Week 7 player breakdown, figure out who we love. Who do you love? All right, got to start at the top here, quarterback. Now, there's an elephant in the room. For those of you who are FD players, you have the luxury and the curse of dealing with the Atlanta-New England game. 55-point total on the Sunday night slate. On DK, you don't have to worry about it. Kind of nice, but also limits your options as far as high-scoring potential goes there. So let's just go ahead and get this out of the way. Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, two of the best options at quarterback here on FanDuel. Like I mentioned, Pats are 31 in AFPA to the quarterback. Atlanta is 22. Both teams giving up points. We know that Tom Brady is currently cruising. He's QB3 in all of fantasy. Matt Ryan struggling, however, only averaging 13 points per game thus far through the season. Not really, you know, that's like good for fantasy quarterback number 25 on the year. Not really great. However, ran the trend, high total games like this. These two has both averaged about 23 points in the past. What's really interesting here is that the Falcons actually have the offensive advantage. The Pats defense is far, far worse than the Falcons. I think that this is a spot where we see Julio pop. I think Freeman could pop because this is the best offensive matchup that they have had. We saw how that went. Freeman had 2 touchdowns, Julio over 100 yards. they're going to have to score. We know that. That's true. They're going to have to score to keep up with the Patriots, who are, you know, the highest scoring offense in the NFL, obviously. But listen to this. I mean, Pats are allowing nearly 5 yards per carry, 76 yards receiving two backs. They're 31st in DVOA to the wide receiver one. The Browns are better. I mean, I don't know how else to say this. The Browns are a better defense than the Patriots are right now. As for Brady, he's a GOAT. He's at home. That means a lot. Listen to this insane stat. Home games with totals over 50, Brady's averaged 30 FanDuel points. With 80% consistency, he scored as much as 37 points in that situation. So if you can fit him in on FanDuel, there's really no reason not to expect that Brady could be one of the top five scoring quarterbacks on the week, obviously allowing for good performances from a couple other guys who are in really good spots. But I think that Brady and Ryan certainly deserve your consideration if you want exposure to what should be a high-scoring affair up in New England. I know that people on DK, you don't have access to that, so you're probably saying, okay, that's fine, Sean, get on with it. And it's probably more, it's definitely a better strategy to roster a high-scoring QB on FanDuel. You just have more room for upside, whereas in DraftKings, you have room for upside because of PPR scoring in your positional players. So I think that's what we got to get out of the way. Now, okay, fine, main slate without that game. I really love Drew Brees going up to Green Bay. He's 8,300, 7,600 on DraftKings. Now, saw an interesting stat from Rich Rebar. Drew Brees hasn't had this kind of a stretch of games where he's thrown under 300 yards ever in his career. That's a little bit concerning. You add to that this defense is in a really good spot against Brent Hundley, and they're favored right now. And I do think the Saints can walk away with this game. I mean, Brent Hundley's only taken 6 snaps before last weekend, and last weekend he threw 3 interceptions and took multiple sacks. Minnesota has a phenomenal pass defense, but the Saints are better right now in DVOA. They are 11th to the pass right now, Minnesota ranking 16th. So if that tells you anything about the improvement of the Saints pass defense, they're not a pushover. And in the last 3 weeks, the Saints defense has forced 7 interceptions, 13 sacks on Jay Cam and Matt Stafford. I mean, don't sit there and tell me that Brett Hundley is somehow better than all three of those quarterbacks and that he is going to be able to resist this defense. I just don't see it. I mean, you're talking about a guy who is not a starter, and you're going up against 3 starters in Jay Cam and Matt Stafford. Fine, Jay and Cam questionable at some points, but this, I think it's a reflection of the quality of the unit that Hundley is going to face in New Orleans if this team is not bad. So Brees is going to have control of the ball. He's favored. He's got one of the higher totals on the week, above 25 points, facing a defense that's 17th in AFPA to the quarterback. But the quarterbacks that they have faced really haven't inspired a lot of fear from a fantasy perspective. Okay, we had Case Keenum. We had Josh McCown. We had only Dak has been the actual, like, real quarterback that they have seen in recent weeks. And Dak gashed him. Dak went for 3 touchdowns in that one, 30 FanDuel points, and was walking up and down the field with Zeke. So I have no problem going to Brees, especially behind this offensive line. Number one in pass protection against this Pack team that, you know, we know has a decent pass rush. 2.3 adjusted sack rate. This team is really primed to be in a really good position because you have one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL history. You have 2 healthy running backs. You have an elite wide receiver in Michael Thomas. And all of a sudden you have a defense that's taking the ball away and forcing sacks. It really is a big deal. Last time, though, Brees played the Pack was in 2014. He went for 303. So that was a long time ago. But that was McCarthy versus Brees, and I think that could be a decent reference point here. The issue that you have with Drew Brees in this situation is that they're going to be able to run the ball and that they will just hammer the run inside the red zone here. So that's a little bit of a concern for me. If I'm pivoting, I don't mind Dak. I think Dak at a very similar price, 8,400 on FanDuel, 7,300 on DraftKings. That's a really good price for him on DK there. I love the guys. I mean, I used to be a Cowboys fan when I was little. I hated him as I got older because I started to realize, like, wait a second. Why did I look up to Michael Irvin and Troy Aikman? I don't really know. I don't know if that was a good idea. But Dak, man, Dak's so easy to love. You got to love Dak here in this situation, especially going on the road to San Francisco, coming off the bye. You know, he is the engine that makes this whole thing go. You guys have heard it here before. I mean, he's had a murderer's row of just at least talented defensive units. And say what you want about these units, but they individually have some good talent on them. The Giants, the Broncos, Arizona, the Rams, and Green Bay. Now, Green Bay probably doesn't qualify, but these are all above average defenses, at least from a positional standpoint with some of the personnel. Now, Arizona, we know, is not playing that way, and the Giants have had some struggles this year, but there's individual talent on all of those pieces. And the last 3 weeks, he's gone for over 22 fantasy points, maxing out with 29 fantasy points. And now he gets a unit like the San Francisco 49ers, allowing tons of scoring, allowing ton of fantasy points, 24 in AFPA to the quarterback. We just saw Kirk go for 3 touchdowns against them, 2 passing, 1 on foot. Brissett had 2. Goff lit them up. Dak is definitely going to be one of the better quarterbacks that he's faced, especially with the weapons around him in Dez and now Zeke back in the mix. So certainly a tough spot. I mean, by QBR, Dak is the best quarterback that they have faced this year. So sneaky thing, though, I like about this game, Cowboys defense is actually worse than the San Francisco defense as far as fantasy points allowed. They're worse to the quarterback, particularly, and then they're slightly better to the wide receiver and running back, but not by more than, I think, like 3 or 4 positional points. So there could definitely be some scoring on the part of the Niners here. Like they did in Washington, they could force this game to be more competitive than the Cowboys actually want it to be. I think that's what you like here, is there could be some back and forth, and that's really good. Could be beneficial to Dak's production and Zeke as well. But I have no problem if you want to get your exposure to the Cowboys game via Zeke. I'll talk about that later. Jared Goff is one of the value guys that I really like this week. He's got Arizona, and we know that you can attack Arizona through the air. Okay, kind of a pass funnel defense team. It's 25th in AFPA to the quarterback, 31st to the wide receiver. Pat Peterson is a shutdown machine, but the rest of this field is wide open for passers to take advantage. We saw Ryan Fitzpatrick jump in relief of Jameis and go to town. It's likely that Patrick Peterson is going to be on Sammy Watkins, so okay, there you go. You take him away. And Goff's recent form has been kind of meh. I mean, he hasn't even hit 10 fantasy points in his last 2 games against Seattle and Jacksonville. But what do we see there? We see 2 of the best pass defenses, if not the best pass defenses in the league. He had solid performances against mediocre defenses in San Francisco and Dallas. They rate similarly in pass DVOA. Arizona 24, San Francisco 26, Dallas 23. So you're right in the same neighborhood of efficiency that where Goff actually performed above 20 points in both of those games. So I think, you know, one of the things that I really like is that deep balls work against this team. Okay, Wentz went deep on this team. Fitzpatrick came in and went deep on this team. Goff is slinging the ball. He's 3rd in total deep balls behind Brady and Palmer. 44 attempts, 27 attempts going over 20 yards, and he's got a pretty decent 43% completion rate. But McVay has clearly said to him, we're going to throw the ball deep. We're going to use your arm strength. We're going to take shots. We're going to set our team up for big plays. And that seems to be the way that Goff is going, and I think that what you possibly get is what you got out of Goff in a couple of those deep attempts in San Francisco. You got a couple deep touchdowns, a couple breakaways from Robert Woods and Sammy Watkins. So we'll see. I mean, it's hard to project a guy who hasn't scored 10 fantasy points in 2 games, but I think he's in as good a spot as any. 7-3 on FanDuel, 5-8 on DraftKings. Tyrod Taylor is interesting. On paper, I mean, everybody loves Tyrod, and he's efficient. I get it. Like, there's a lot of reasons to like Tyrod. He's 7-1 on FanDuel, 5-1 on FanDuel. I want to love him, but I'm going to do this because I don't think I'm going to end up playing him, except for maybe in some tournament lineups, so I'll let you decide. Pros and cons here. You ready? Home quarterback coming off a bye, averaging 6-plus rushing attempts per game, 24-plus rushing yards. Efficient. 62% completion rate, not a ton of attempts per game, but He's getting wins regularly, the winning quarterback at home, facing a Tampa Bay defense that's literally the worst in the AFPA to the wide receiver and 30th to the quarterback. They allowed a massive game on the ground to Adrian Peterson, so LeSean McCoy should be relatively effective. They're revealing wrinkles and problems with the rest of that rush defense that we've seen after, you know, games, for decent games from a number of different rushing pieces in Mike Gillisley and Deion Lewis, and then, of course, Wayne Gallman had a decent spot. They dropped 7 spots in the rush defense last week. The cons are very clear as well to me. Tyrod has a ceiling. He's maxed out at 18 fantasy points this year. His starting tight end is out, Charles Clay, indefinitely. His starting wide receiver has been out for 2 weeks, Jordan Matthews. The Bills have only scored 17 points per game. That's 5th lowest in the NFL. But they only allow 14, which is why they're winning, because they're a defense-first team. They're going to make this game as boring as possible. So there's zero shootout potential here, unless Jameis just starts firing it up to Mike Evans. It's really up to you guys. I mean, I love him as a player. I don't really know if I want my quarterback that basically is like, hey, if you get me 20 points, that is amazing. But if you get me 11 points, that's kind of what I expected. Where are the weapons? I mean, it's just LeSean McCoy. You know, he's a great DK value, and if you can talk yourself into McCoy, I think that that's probably the best route to go to get exposure to this offense. I don't know if Tyrod's my favorite way to do it. So, quick hits here. I know you're going to think, wait a second, you didn't mention some of these people. Mariota, yes, Mariota's in play. I don't have to tell you quarterback's in play against the Browns. I love Mariota in this spot. The problem is that I want to see a practice report. I don't think it's too much to ask for, so I know that hamstring is healthy. He stood still. You're going to stand still against Myles Garrett? That makes me worried. Honestly, I trust the Titans' offensive line. They're very good. Mariota was able to get the ball out of his hands very quickly against the Indy pass rush, but the Indy pass rush does not feature Marcus Mariota, and you can run the ball in Indy, which is the difference here. You can't run the ball in Cleveland. So as much as I love Mariota, I think there is a little bit of a limited upside if he doesn't have his mobility. Like, I love him. I want to play him. But if you're telling me that it's Mariota or Dak, I think I probably would take Dak because, I mean, what's the tiebreaker there? The tiebreaker is that Dak could actually scramble for 30 yards, whereas Mariota doesn't have that in his game. They're only $300 different. So I think that's kind of my Mariota take. I love Mariota this week, though. Don't get me wrong. Now, as for some other ideas, Roethlisberger is interesting. He's been really bad. Roethlisberger could be interesting if Drake Kirkpatrick and Pac-Man Jones are out. If Adam Jones and Drake Kirkpatrick are out, I think it's very, very interesting as a GPP play. But that's it. Carson Palmer is just too cheap. He's possible. That should be a competitive game. The Rams are going to score. They're going to have to keep up. That's interesting to me. That's kind of it as far as the quarterback goes. Moving on to running back. When we go to the top of the board, it's very clear that there are really two guys that you want in your lineups. It's very difficult to fit them in together this week, however. Leonard Fournette, Zeke, those are my guys. Fournette has Indianapolis. He's a road favorite against the Colts. Team that's allowing the most points in the NFL. Colts are 20th in DVOA to the rush, 31st in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the rush. Listen, Fournette has averaged 99 yards per game. Highest run rate in the NFL, 52% run rate for the Jags. They're running the ball 56% of the time inside the red zone. He's gotten 16 touches inside the red zone. That's 4th overall, 4 touchdowns inside of there, tied for 2nd. He's also netted 2 monster 80-yarders in the last 2 weeks. We've seen that. That has boosted his production to over 6 yards per carry. Looking specifically at Indy's defense, I always like to see, you know, when you know these backs are going to be getting a ton of volume, you like to see where teams are going to attack and how they're going to attack and if they do it effectively there. So straight up the gut against Indianapolis has yielded 3.9 yards per carry and 6 explosive runs. Now, it's been the highest volume place that people attack, which most of the time it is. Most teams will run it between the tackles, but you can run the ball between the tackles against Indianapolis. That's the point. They've given up 200 total yards and 2 touchdowns to that. The Jags hammer the middle the most in the NFL. 67% of their runs go straight up the gut. Let's do some math. Let's presume that Fournette's going to get at least 21 carries minimum. 67% of those are going to go straight up the gut. We're talking about 14 carries, 4 yards a pop. You're looking at a floor, if none of those go deep, you're looking at a floor of about 60 yards for Fournette just on those. And then your other 7 touches, who knows what you get on top of that. I mean, so we're talking about a pretty significant floor for Fournette in this situation, on top of the possibility that he probably hammers one into the end zone because his team allows 30 points per game. Add all that up, it's really not hard to expect 100 yards and a touchdown. I mean, that's just kind of what Fournette does. And you take these 80-yard runs and they're benefits. The problem is, of course, as always, and I will say this again and again and again, is you attach your skill position players to bad quarterback play, you're always in a risk. Attaching yourself to Blake Bortles is not always a good idea. It really isn't. But this Indy team is bad, and that makes you feel a little bit better. Zeke, however, not attached to a bad quarterback and in an excellent spot. A lot easier to like him, especially at a little bit of a cheaper price. San Francisco, 30th in AFPA to the running back, 13th in DVOA. What does that show us? They're relatively efficient on a play-to-play basis. They're not going to allow a ton of monstrous plays, a ton of scoring, but they do allow production as far as fantasy production goes on a game-to-game basis, and they have allowed some outlier-type performances specifically to guys like, you know, Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley blew them up. They've also faced a terrible, terrible array of running backs. I mean, listen to this. Samaje Perine, who is massively inefficient and going to lose his job the minute that Rob Kelly is healthy. Okay, the Cardinals minus AP and DJ. So Andre Ellington and Kerwin Williams, Chris Johnson, that's who faced them. Yeesh. Gore and Mack. Mac went for like 10 yards per carry, by the way. Robert Turbin out for the year. Busted elbow. Go get Marlon Mack. And the Seahawks committee. The Thomas Rawls, Eddie Lacy experiment. You know, I mean, this is not hard. And John Stewart. Todd Gurley is the only comp, and Gurley went for 3 touchdowns on 150 scrimmage yards. This is a good Zeke spot. This is a great Zeke spot. That's all I'm going to say. Gurley went for 3 touchdowns and 150 scrimmage yards. That's the only relatively good talent comp that we can make for what has happened to the San Francisco defense when they face a good running back. That's it. That's all I got for you. Moving on to some cheaper guys. LeSean McCoy, I like a lot in this situation. I think you have to. There's only one skill player on the Bills. It's McCoy. He's going to be the whole offense until Matthews is healthy and Clay returns. He's top 10 in touches. He's seeing 22 touches per game. He hasn't done a lot with him. Only 0.41 fantasy points per touch because he's averaging 14 fantasy points per game. And he hasn't gotten a touchdown this year. So, I mean, you take that baseline of 14 fantasy points and you add a touchdown, all of a sudden you're getting 21 fantasy points from LeSean McCoy. That's what you expect. That's what you want from LeSean McCoy. And so I think that's this kind of a week. You know, I mean, Bucks just allowed 130 rushing yards, okay? The real question for me is not the rushing yards. It's the question of the receiving production. That's where McCoy's ceiling really comes into play. I mean, he's got an 83% catch rate this season. The hands are well documented. Now, 2016, he only caught 10% of balls out of the slot. That's not as many as I wanted to see, because what I was looking for here is they have almost zero wide receivers in this backfield or on this team without Jordan Matthews. Zay Jones just is not doing anything. I talked about this yesterday. You know, if he was able to get a couple nice routes out of the slot, we know that he is going to get some extra receiving production there. I think it's fair for us to assume that the receiving upside here, if McCoy lines up at wide receiver at all, could be there. Now, I haven't been watching Bills games enough to see whether or not McCoy is lining up outside of the backfield, how often he's getting snaps out of the slot or whatever. The point is this. He may get a couple freebies here as a receiver, rack up some receiving yards, because we know that this team struggles to guard receivers out of the slot. And who knows, they could say, listen, we're going to drop McCoy in the slot and we're going to take advantage of that in the same way that Larry Fitzgerald did. I'm not sure. He's not Larry Fitzgerald, obviously. He's a lot smaller, but he is just as crafty and he has very good hands. So that could work. If you're on FanDuel, I think you got to give Devonta Freeman a look. New England, 27th in fantasy points allowed to the running back, allowing some of the most points per game on the whole. So you have to expect that, you know, he's going to get goal line looks. He's going to get the opportunities inside the 10, inside the 5. He's got the most red zone touchdowns of any running back this year at 6. New England allowing a 56% success rate in the red zone, which is actually like 25th in the league. So not great. They're going to allow rushing success. Just a question whether or not Devonta Freeman gets the volume, or he's splitting with Tevin Coleman, how that all shapes out, because he has been splitting with Coleman. They've been getting him involved. Oh, two guys I'm going to pivot to here. This conversation is basically about, I like him, but I don't. Okay. Jay Ajayi versus the Jets, CJ Anderson versus the Chargers. Those are the two who I have a little bit of love for, but also a lot of issue with. I don't know how you get away from Jay Ajayi here. I'm going to try to be neutral, but I'm going to say I don't love this. He's averaged 5.4 fantasy points in the last two seasons against this team, and we just saw him burn us in week one. If you go back to teams playing them the second time, usually production goes down, scoring goes down second time around in divisional games because teams know how to play for each other, plan for each other. So I don't know. Jets, though, 29th in AFPA to the running back, allowing 23 FanDuel points per game. Ajayi basically has all of the workload in that backfield. 95% of the work coming out of that backfield is his. So if the Jets, for whatever reason, are going to allow, you know, more points than they usually do to Ajayi, then this could be a game where he blows up. He got 26 touches last game against the Falcons, and you know, Falcons are equally bad against the rush. The only difference that I can possibly think of in Ajayi's performance is the injury, or the coke blowing offensive line coach being out of there and them actually being like, listen, this is actually a better scheme, let's run this. That's all I got. I have no idea. But again, you're attaching yourself to poor quarterback play, and you have a precedent here that is not great. But this is a great spot. I would not be surprised if Ajayi goes off for, you know, 100 and a touchdown. That makes a lot of sense. I think the pivot to CJ Anderson makes a lot of sense here too. He's still not my favorite. There's a couple guys that are even cheaper that I like more, and I'm going to mention both of them. He's facing a Chargers team with no Emmanuel Sanders. They're on the road. Chargers allowing the most rush yards per game, highest yards per carry, highest yards before contact at 2.5, more than two opportunities inside the 5 per game. That all belongs to CJ on this Denver team. Rushes inside the 5 belong to CJ. Ground game belongs to CJ. Here's the concern, the workload. He gets 60% of the touches in the ground game. Jamaal Charles is getting a couple touches per game, but not one target last game. Okay, those were all stolen by Devontae Booker and Jamaal Charles. Negative game script means that when this team is trailing, CJ Anderson isn't going to see the field. And they are in a pick'em right now with the Chargers because of the way that the way that this team has played recently. Denver's defense has kind of been hit or miss. They're missing Emmanuel Sanders. It's not a lock that this team is going to win this game. So you have to be a little bit concerned. I mean, here's the splits. Anderson in the Giants game had 38 snaps. Fine. Okay. That was about half the team's snaps. Booker and Charles accumulated 43 total. So you have this 50-25-25 split that is really, really game script dependent, because you didn't see much volume for CJ at all in the passing game. They used Jamaal Charles, they used Devontae Booker in that spot. So a little bit disappointing. I think if you get positive game script, or for whatever reason you think Denver's got this, don't worry about it, then you know CJ's... I mean, the reality is you know he's going to get the first half carries. Is he going to get second half work in this situation, or is he going to be kept, you know, kind of below that 50% mark as far as snaps goes? And in the red zone, are they going to get to the red zone? I mean, this team has been very good at getting to the red zone. They've been very successful. They most trips to the red zone in the NFL, 12 trips, you know, and I mean, very heartening to see Simeon last week go for over 300 passing yards. But no Emmanuel Sanders kind of makes me a little bit bearish right now on C.J. Anderson and the possibility. He could have a great game, and if I have him, you know, season-long, I'm starting him, but I think DFS, I may look elsewhere. Two other guys that I can look at, Mark Ingram, man. Same price as C.J. Anderson on FanDuel, obviously. He's going to be popular. He should be. He's been getting the volume. He's getting a big favorite in a game where the Saints should be able to establish a lead. We know that they're going to be giving him the ball. They're going to feed him the ball in those situations. They, you know, the Packers just allowed 100 total scrimmage yards and two touchdowns to McKinnon. He played 50. McKinnon only played 57% of the team snaps. This is basically the same 60-40, 70-30 split. McKinnon and Murray versus McKinnon and Murray versus Ingram and Kamara. So, you know, I'm not worried about the splitting with Kamara. I think Kamara's talent just makes this team more apt to run the ball more frequently. I think the people that it hurts is everyone except for Michael Thomas in the passing game. You know, it's going to hurt Ted Ginn. It's going to hurt Willie Snead. Tight ends have never really been a thing since we noticed Cody Fleener is not really that useful recently. So I think that's really what it is, that this team is going to go through Breeze, the two backs, and Thomas, and that's fine. You know, we know where the concentration of production is going to be. Green Bay hasn't allowed massive weeks to the running back except for McKinnon last week and Zeke the week before. I mean, they've seen some pretty bad running backs too. I mean, they've seen, you know, guys like they've seen the Bears pair with Glennon, which wasn't great. On a Thursday night, they saw they gave it up to Freeman. They saw the Bengals backfield, which was kind of a mess. You know, Joe Mixon's first like real start. But this team will give up production, and I think the fact that they have a little bit of concern with Hundley under center, possibility that they're not going to be able to hold on to the ball, the success of the passing game, it all adds up as positive game script for Mark Ingram. So I like Mark Ingram a lot. Probably feel at least as confident with him as I do in C.J. Anderson, no doubt. Carlos Hyde, though, is very interesting as well. 6,700 on FanDuel, well-priced on DraftKings. I mean, he got the work back last week. Nearly 18 touches, I believe, if it was all said and done. He got the goal line work. San Francisco, interesting stat. You ready for this? 9.5 red zone opportunities per game. 9.5 red zone plays per game. Now, that seems pretty small, but you have to put that in perspective. That's within the top 25% of the league. Denver's tops at 12. So, Dallas, well below average in AFPA to the quarterback. We know they're below average to the running back and the wide receiver. We saw Aaron Jones carve them up. We saw Todd Gurley carve them up. I think Hyde could be in a really good spot here. I think, you know, the nice thing is that at his price point at 6,700 at FanDuel, you're very likely that he's going to get that goal line work as well. So all they have to get is a goal line trip against these Cowboys. And like I said, this could be a little bit more of a back and forth than we actually realize. As far as cheapy guys, James White is interesting. I like James White on FanDuel in that game. I think that's a really good spot. I think you could go down to Kamara if you wanted to really spend down there. I'm not that interested in AP. I think it's there. I think it makes sense. I just think there's a decent chance that he doesn't see the volume that he saw last week because they could be a negative game script. If they're a negative game script against this Rams team, then he's definitely not going to see the ball. You know, he probably won't see the ball. So at least not 26 carries, but he could see 20 carries. Rams defense certainly willing to, you know, decent spot to exploit them there. As well. So those are kind of some names that I'm thinking as far as, you know, other spots that you could go to. Wide receiver Julio, obviously on FanDuel. I'll talk about this real quick versus New England. You're not going to be alone. Listen, he's going to be chalky. There's going to be a lot of people that plant their flag and say, it's worth it. Trust me, it's worth it. And his access to that ceiling is worth it. He's one of the most physically gifted receivers in the NFL. Pats are 27th in AFPA. In DVOA, they're actually 31st to the wide receiver. We saw Julio carve up the deep middle of the Green Bay defense. That's the spot where the Pats actually struggle quite a bit as well. 106 passer rating to that space on the field, particularly struggling across the middle. They're decent on the edges. They've been able to force people out on the edges, but they are definitely struggling across the middle. The deep cross, I'm just dreaming of that deep crossing route from the left. lined up on the left, runs, you know, that 9-yard route, and then all of a sudden he just takes off slightly vertical across the middle of the field, and it's just catch me if you can. That's what I'm dreaming of for Julio. So I have no problem with Julio Jones. I think you can easily pivot down to Dez. The Niners pass defense showed up against Kirk Cousins, against the wide receivers. Whatever. Don't care. Dez is a bit of a nightmare for them. He's going to get a lot of Dante Johnson. He's below 50 grade in PFF. Dez just has the matchup advantage here in this situation. I don't think that you need to question his red zone volume. You know, they throw it 60% of the time inside the red zone, and we've seen Dez get end zone targets in every single game this year. He is their other end zone option. So no doubt about it that he is very, very interesting. Niners allowing a 65% completion rate, 23rd in DVOA to the wide receiver one, and we saw T.Y. Hilton destroy them. So I think this is actually a welcome matchup for Dez, and it gets a mediocre pass defense. I like him quite a bit. Antonio Brown and Mike Evans are two guys that I have my eye on. Very interested in them because it is injury dependent. Okay. AB isn't necessarily out of the question because he's AB. You start him every single week. In DFS, though, the question is whether or not he is going to see Dre Kirkpatrick and Adam Jones. If those guys are out, you got to fire up AB at home. That's really, really interesting here. If they're in, then I think it's fine. But Mike Evans is the same way. I mean, EJ Gaines missed. He's their best cover corner. If EJ Gaines is out, Evans gets a massive upgrade in his matchup and advantage there. People are probably going to continue to gravitate towards what they already know and understand. And Julio and Dez, very similar prices, very similar situations. But Evans, man, even in tough matchups, New York, Minnesota, Chicago, and I do qualify Chicago as a tough matchup. I think we should qualify them. They're currently ranked fourth in AFPA to the wide receiver. They're actually proving to be a pretty tough pass defense. So New York, Minnesota, Chicago, Evans produced a minimum of 13 PPR points. He's seen double-digit targets when Winston is in this game. You know, do I like the game script? Not really. But, you know, if for whatever reason the Bills go up in this game because Tampa Bay's defense is terrible, then, you know, Mike Evans is going to get the ball. So, and it's a pass funnel, really. It is, because they're very good against the rush. And last week we saw that when the Bucs couldn't run the ball, they just throw the ball. When they can't, when Doug Martin can't get it going, they just throw it. So if EJ Gaines is out, I think you gotta like him. I mean, let's not forget what AJ Green did when EJ Gaines was out. 189-1. That's no joke. And Mike Evans and AJ Green, they're both matchup proof. Evans is definitely still in play, even if you want to be really contrarian. But I think I like him even more if EJ Gaines is out. We'll know more as the week goes on. Follow Twitter, follow me, whatever the case may be. You'll find out. Cheat sheet subscribers, you'll know. Pivoting off of the big name wide receivers. Well, this is going to be a big name this week. Michael Thomas versus Green Bay. He will be one of the best plays on the board. People go after the wide receivers in Green Bay, especially because they've had some nice wide receiver one matchups. Julio, Dez, all, you know, very, very, very chalky in their various spots. The interesting thing about this week is that Thomas has probably the best matchup they've had. Multiple injuries in the secondary. We talked about it yesterday. Four different starters in the secondary between corners and safeties that are injured in that defensive backfield. So Green Bay defensive ranking is 22nd in AFPA. Thielen carved them up for 997. That sounds a lot like the lines that Thomas put up on some plus matchups. You know, he's done 80 plus yards against Miami. He did 80 plus yards against Carolina. He did 80 plus yards against who was the other one? Who's the last one? Anyway, three plus matchups, Thomas has put up 80 plus yards and two touchdowns in those. So he should be good for about 10 targets, you know, and I think that those 10 targets against a Green Bay secondary with Drew Brees, that's always appealing to me. Demaryius Thomas, very interesting spot for him. Manuel Sanders is out. The ankle is a thing. The matchup with Casey Hayward, not really a good one for anybody else but Demaryius Thomas. He's actually one receiver who got over on him this year. He saw 8 targets in week 1, got 5 receptions for 67 yards. In week 6, we saw Semien just hammer him, even against Janoris Jenkins. just absolutely hammer him. DT saw 14 targets on 133 yards. He's matchup proof because he's just a physical freak. So, you know, same as Mike Evans, he's matchup proof. He takes advantage of the matchup, and I think Simeon knows how to get him the ball. So Demaryius Thomas, very, very interesting to me as a kind of a contrarian guy that people may be questioning, you know, may question because of the Casey Hayward matchup there. Pierre Garçon, he is in a great spot for those of us on DK here. 12 targets last week. 9 of those came from Bedard. 3 of those incompletions were 3 of those targets incompletions were from Hoyer. So he was 0-for-3 with Hoyer, and then he went 5-for-9 with CJ Bethard. The Dallas secondary, though, much worse than the Washington defense. Washington is 2 in AFPA to the wide receiver. Dallas is 20. They are going to be trailing here, no doubt about it. Garçon should be the advantage, get the advantage in negative game script. He's seen 11 and 12 targets in his last two games. He's averaging about 10 targets, 9.95 plus. On the year, he still hasn't found the end zone, but listen, San Francisco moving the ball, who knows? Garçon could be a key part of this offense. He could put up a very similar line to what we expect from Michael Thomas, 10 targets, nearly 100 yards type situation. So I like Garçon. I especially like him on DK. Another DK play, Jarvis, obviously a lot like the DT play, but it's also injury dependent, like kind of like the Mike Evans, Antonio Brown play. If Parker plays, then he's going to probably see Morris Claiborne. Parker will probably get the Morris Claiborne treatment. He's been very solid this year. But outside of that, if Parker doesn't, I mean, Claiborne's not going to go to the slot is my point. And he is his number one target. He's Jay's number one target. He's seen 11 and 14 targets in two spots against the Falcons and the Jets. Against the Jets, he saw 14 targets. Now, obviously, the average depth of target is not valuable, but those catches are valuable. So we should keep an eye on the Devontae Parker news. I think that makes him as appealing. I think that that's what I like. I think that there's a good recipe for success if Morris Claiborne is on Parker here. Going down to the value tier, not a ton that I love. Not a ton that I love, but I will say this. Eric Decker or Rishard Matthews? It's got to be Rishard Matthews. Matthews should be in a great spot. McCourty probably won't shadow Matthews, is my guess. I think McCourty will just stay on his preferred left side. That means that Eric Decker will line up a lot across from him. Decker has been great in his connection with he's been getting better in his connection with what's his name? Mariota, but Corey Davis could be back this week, hamstring injury. So we'll see what that brings. Corey Davis, hard to, you know, he kind of makes this whole thing a little bit harder to understand. I, you know, if I'm the Titans, I may leave Corey Davis out. Just give him an extra week. Trust that you can beat the Browns with, you know, Mariota, Matthews and Walker, you know what I mean? Like give him an extra week. You don't want another injury to skill position player. I know you're eager to get the kid back out there, but that means Matthews is probably going to line up across from Juwan Taylor. He was on Fuller last week. We saw the deep touchdown. Now, Matthews isn't quite the deep guy, but he is an excellent receiver. We know the rapport that he has with Mariota already very well established as Matthews leads this team in targets and receiving yards right now. Robert Woods is the other guy that I'm interested in. He'll be in the same position as Matthews here, opposite the shadow corner, opposite the good corner. Patrick Peterson probably on Sammy Watkins. That means that Woods gets the opposite, much weaker corner in Justin Bethel, and he has actually been the leading receiver on this Rams team, leading in targets, leading in receiving yards, leading in catches, everything. So definitely interested in Robert Woods as well. That's about it in the value. I mean, I think that's the problem is you have a lot of wide receivers in the premium spots that you want to pay for. That's tough. That's really tough for me this week. There are a lot of backs wide receivers that I want to pay for in this spot. Now, moving on, tight end here. I got 3 for you, and I really don't have to go beyond these because they're all priced kind of similarly. These are my guys. I love Delanie Walker, 5,900 on FanDuel versus Cleveland. I don't need to give you any more analysis than that, but he hasn't popped yet. He hasn't had that game. He's seen targets. You know, he's been running routes. He's been getting looks. This is the best matchup, though, that he has had thus far. So versus Cleveland, that should be a really, really good spot for Delanie Walker to do Delanie Walker things. You know, 8 receptions, 60 yards, touchdown type line. Jimmy Graham is probably my favorite. 5,800 on FanDuel versus the Giants. Why? Well, the Giants allow the most production to the wide receiver. And Jimmy Graham is pretty much the only pass catcher that I trust. If this offense is going to go through Russell Wilson, it's not going to go through the running game. We saw them shut down the run last week in Denver. If they're going to have to throw the ball, I think Jimmy Graham is the guy who takes advantage of that. And probably in certain situations, we've seen Graham soak up massive red zone volume. I like Jimmy Graham quite a bit in this spot. Hunter Henry's the last one. He has been excellent of late. You know, he's got Denver. Evan Ingram just did some damage against them. He is the cheapest of the three, so I'm definitely in on Henry. His snap rate has gone up. His targets have gone up. He's massively efficient. He just keeps putting up double-digit fantasy points. So I'm in on Henry. I would love to see him get in the end zone here as well. That's about it. I don't think you have to go much below that. Those are such good plays that I think you're probably risking something if you don't take one of these elite. You have three elite talent, you know, top 10 type talent wide receiver tight ends in really, really good spots. I mean, I think you could go to the Atlanta New England game if you wanted to go to Gronk, or you wanted to go to Austin Hooper. I have no problem with that, but I think that these three guys are probably going to be the highest owned and the most productive. For me, as a tiebreaker, who do I go with? I don't know. Part of me is really, really interested in Jimmy Graham, just because I think he has multi-touchdown upside, because there's really no other. Seattle throws the ball a lot inside the red zone, primarily because they don't trust their running backs. And there's really no other options, right? That's kind of why I like Graham. I think he has multi-touchdown upside. Delanie Walker, though, and Hunter Henry, definitely have the ability to be involved in like 80% of, you know, on the field for 80% of snaps and just getting a ton of volume. So we've seen that from them before. As far as defense goes, very interested in the Titans, very interested in Jacksonville. I don't know who's going to be quarterback for the Browns, but it doesn't matter. They throw interceptions. Titans actually look pretty solid against Jacoby Brissett. Maybe they're figuring some stuff out. They're not very good at creating turnovers, but they should be good at limiting points, creating some sacks here. Jacksonville, obviously, right? Jacoby Brissett on the opposite side there. Best pass defense. They're just going to, I don't think they're going to let him do anything. Brissett's good. He's not great. And they're going to be able to pin their ears back and get some sacks. I think you can go to the Saints too. The Saints are really interesting. They're in a mid tier right there. Price. I think we've seen how many turnovers they're capable of creating. We've seen Hundley throw the interception. They're on the road. Yes. But I think that you got some playmakers on this defense. And I think that we should try to take advantage while people, you know, strike while the iron's hot, while people still go, they're still the Saints, and they just don't understand how much better this defense has been at creating turnovers and how effective they've been. The last one is this is crazy. The Chargers defense right now is 4,100 on FanDuel. That's just almost stupidly cheap. That's like the min price, I think. And no Emmanuel Sanders, the Vegas total, they're at home. It all kind of adds up to how did the pricing algorithm screw up this bad? I mean, they give up a lot of rushing production, no doubt about it, but you still have a team that has some of the better edge rushers in the game in Joey Bosa Ingram. Who's the other one? Who's the other edge rusher? I can't remember. And, you know, I mean, Casey Hayward is no slouch, and you have no Emmanuel Sanders on that. So you have no Emmanuel Sanders. You eliminate the weapons. We saw them struggle last week with the Giants defense. Do I think they're going to give up a lot of sacks and turnovers? I don't know. But the price is really nice. So, you know, you get just a normal 6-point floor, 7-point floor from a defense. For 4,100 allows you to get up to a different wide receiver or something like that. Kicker, Ryan Succop. Log out. Ryan Succop, they got the Browns. suck up is just he. We saw him score. He scored. I needed 23 fantasy points in my season long league with T.Y. Hilton and suck up. T.Y. Hilton got me 1.9. Suck up got me 21. And I still lost by 0.3 points. So that was tilting, but, you know, he's the man. I love Ryan Succop. He's been very consistent. So I think he's my kicker. Obviously you could go to one of the kickers in the Atlanta New England game, but I think Succop has just as much upside here. They could score a ton of points and they clearly, you know, trust him, rely on him. And they're heavy favorites in this situation against the Browns. So that is what I like this week on FanDuel, on DraftKings. Hey, lineup logic DFS, get out there, follow the content that we're putting out all week, look for good stuff. Yes, we're going to start coming out with some NBA stuff. Yes, there's going to be articles on my Twitter feed. Yes, I'm going to post the stats thread, please retweet the stats thread. It's one of the best ways that you can help the show. People love that thing, and I love doing it. And that's one of the best ways. You just retweet that stats thread. If you like it, retweet it. That makes a big difference for me. And review. We keep up with the big boys via the reviews, guys. We kept up with the big boys with the reviews. And it's just me. You know, it's just me. Appreciate you guys. See you next week.